You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a city shining on a hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Americans for Truth Hour. My name is Peter LaBarbera. I'm president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. Americans for Truth is an organization that is on the opposite side of the so-called gay movement. The homosexual activist movement is very powerful. It's variegated. There are a number of groups specializing in different areas. All areas of life, actually, and it's a hugely influential lobby in our society, and it's made considerable strides in normalizing homosexuality and creating the impression that homosexuality is a civil rights issue as opposed to a moral issue, which is what we believe. Americans for Truth is a single issue organization. We're trying to educate people on this agenda and the implications of it. And we have a very special guest today. But before I get to her, I'd like to say that our website is AmericansForTruth.org, all written out, AmericansForTruth.org or .com or .net. Visit us on the web. There's a bunch of information there about the homosexual lobby. We defend the biblical worldview on homosexuality, the traditional moral perspective. And we also expose the agenda of the homosexual activist movement. One article that we had on the site recently was about a group called the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, which is one of the grassroots lobbying and activism arms of the overall homosexual movement. And they have an annual seminar for activists called Creating Change. And we occasionally print some of the workshops that they have at these conferences. They're huge events. And there was one called Young and Poly, with a question mark, and poly referring to polyamorous or multiple partner, I guess they would say, orientation. And so here we see this hugely influential homosexual group, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, essentially ratifying the idea of that children or teenagers could have a polyamorous lifestyle, and that that's okay. And this is the way that homosexuality was mainstreamed in the culture. There was a time when homosexuality was taboo, not even discussed, and now it's discussed everywhere. You can't get away from it. And it's interesting to me to see now polyamory, or so-called multiple partner lifestyles, now is the next frontier, I guess, in this deviant movement. But our guest today, tonight, is Lori Higgins, who's a great activist, an up-and-coming activist. Lori is a writer writing on education issues at the Illinois Family Institute, based in outside Chicago. Lori, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Pete.
Well, Lori, I'm going to brag about you, okay? Lori is really just an excellent writer, and I encourage everybody listening to subscribe to the Illinois Family Institute emails that often feature Lori's writing. The website is illinoisfamily.org. Again, our website is americansfortruth.org. But Lori just has a gift for bringing reason to the discussion. She deconstructs some of the arguments, and that's what we're going to be talking about here today. Lori was a writing instructor at Deerfield High School in the northern suburbs of Chicago. Lori, tell us about that. How long were you a writing instructor?
Well, I worked full-time in the writing center for 8 years, and I substitute taught for 2.5 years before that. This was also the high school which all four of my children attended, so I was pretty familiar with both administration, faculty, and sort of what was going on behind the scenes.
Well, tell us, what is it like to be a teacher with a conservative, pro-family, Christian worldview in a liberal school district like Deerfield?
Well, in two words, it's oppressive and very difficult. And I I actually, when I started working there, I had no intention of being an activist. I didn't know there was any need for speaking out on any of these issues. And over the last decade, there's been significant shifts in sort of the political climate. I don't think just at Deerfield High School, although it might be more problematic than some other schools in the Midwest because it is a pretty politically liberal community. The discouraging thing, well, there's a couple of discouraging things. One is that conservatives self-censor out of fear of professional and personal repercussions. I think their fear is legitimate regarding personal repercussions, and for tenured faculty, I think the fears of professional repercussions are really not justifiable. But nonetheless, it's very difficult. I was not on a tenure track position because I was full-time in the writing center and not in the classroom. So it was a little more, my job was a little more insecure than tenured teachers. But that was the discouraging part to me, was that there were many conservative teachers who were as upset as I was and would not speak out because they didn't even want colleagues mad at them. And I think that's cowardly. And
isn't
I think the
that,
difficulty, I just want to say one thing. In even in any schools, this is a difficult issue to address because young teachers are coming out of schools and departments of education, and they are taught one sort of set of ideas about homosexuality. So even if you're in a relatively conservative community, you're going to have the same push to affirm homosexuality in public schools.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the self-censorship that you're talking about, isn't that representative of the culture at large? There are many, many people who agree with the pro-family movement, but not many people willing to speak out.
Absolutely. And parents that will contact me because an issue has arisen in their school, either an anti-bullying curricula has come into their school, a curriculum has come into their school, and it's for elementary schools, and it is affirming liberal ideas of homosexuality and gender identity disorder, and they want to do something, and they go out to their conservative friends and are really stunned to find that no one will come on board and address the issue, or very few people. And so I think in public schools, if you're a teacher or a staff member, you probably have opportunities, more opportunities than sort of just a parent in the community, where you're called on to address this because of what's going on with anti-bullying resources, with professional development opportunities. I shouldn't even say they're opportunities, but kind of diversity training and things like this. Teachers are called on to address this issue and respond to that, and they have more opportunities to do so. And so their cowardice, I guess, is more problematic and more noticeable.
Well, was it Burke who said, you know, all it takes for evil to triumph is that good men do nothing? And that's what we're seeing. You know, the other side appears to have little restraint, no compunction against, you know, doing whatever it takes to push their agenda, even though their agenda is built on lies.
Right.
They are completely sold out, and they won't even settle for even the smallest compromise, it seems, these days. And yet our side is so willing to compromise, so willing to censor itself. And I guess what's the answer to that other than good people speaking out?
Well, and I think they need some help in understanding the specious secular arguments that are used to normalize homosexuality, that are used in schools, that are used in the culture. One problem is I think Christians are actually being minimally confused by these arguments, if not seduced or persuaded by them. And that's what's frustrating to me, is there's all sorts of assumptions and propositions, implicit and explicit, in the culture, in schools, and no one ever demands that liberals, provide justification or evidence for their assumptions that are deeply flawed.
And we're going to be getting into those, Lori, but before we do, we have 2 minutes before the first break. What tell us about this awful incident where you actually did a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, about your name at the school because you had the hunch that some awful things were said about you at Deerfield High School.
Well, it was after I quit. And I was quit because they moved me out of the writing center and the English department into the testing center where you actually don't do anything. And so I...
So you were in academic Siberia over there at Deerfield High School?
Well, it was academic and geographic. It was in the bowels of the school in a windowless room. And previous to my tenure there, that's what I was supposed to work, there was 5 different people who were assigned for a little over an hour a day. And all of them came to me separately after they heard that I was going to be assigned there the next year and told me that no one could do that all day by themselves. But so anyways, after I quit, I filed a Freedom of Information Act request on any in-school communication, district communication that used my name, and I was stunned at what I found. I mean, some of the most, certainly lies
Well, there were awful things, and we're going to go into it. We have a minute before the break, but I guess we should back up a little bit, and you got 50 seconds, and we'll come back after the break. But what led you to be demoted in this way? What had you done? What crime had you committed?
Well, I had told many administrators, school board members, that on the issue of homosexuality, they either needed to take it out of the school or address both sides of the debate regarding the ontology, which means the nature of something, the ontology and morality of homosexuality, either address both sides or take it out of the school. And I had been critical of their promotion of social justice theory, saying the same thing. Either you present criticisms of social justice theory when you have introduced pro-social justice theory resources.
Okay, well, Lori, we're going to come back. We're talking to Lori Higgins of Illinois Family Institute. This is Peter LaBarber with the Americans for Truth Hour, AmericansForTruth.org. We'll be back in a minute. Well, hello, everybody. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. My name is Peter LaBarber. I'm president of Americans for Truth. We are based outside Chicago. We are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the powerful so-called gay movement. I don't think there's too much gay about it. It's a movement that promotes homosexuality as normal and as a supposedly a civil rights issue. Lori, we're going to get into the specious arguments used by gay activists. We're talking to Lori Higgins of Illinois Family Institute again. Lori, let's get back to how you were sort of demoted and punished for your beliefs. You made these demands, or you requested that they be fair about their dealings with the homosexual issue at Deerfield High School.
Right. Well, actually, and there was, I also had been very involved in criticizing our AP senior English teacher for teaching the play Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes.
Okay, wait a minute. I think it's a revolting play. We have a family show, although we're on at 11 o'clock at night. Tell us as best you can, describe Angels in America.
Okay. It is a Pulitzer Prize-winning play by the homosexual playwright Tony Kushner. I get that in there because it's always used as a defense for the play that it's won a Pulitzer Prize, which is actually an interesting. My husband did some research into that. As near as we can tell, it was 3 people on the Pulitzer committee who chose it. But the play is centrally about homosexuality. It's about defending it and normalizing it. It involves, there is one couple who are a married Mormon couple, and their marriage breaks up over the husband's homosexuality. There's another homosexual couple, and their relationship splits up because one of them has contracted AIDS. The one who doesn't have AIDS leaves and takes up with the Mormon husband and has a graphic, and I mean graphic, sexual relationship with the married Mormon husband. There's also...
Oh, hold on, Lori. So, and this is all... This was taught to the probably the brightest kids, what, juniors and seniors or just seniors?
But it was also taught to regular level seniors the year before. That's one of the justifications they offered, is that this is just for senior AP students and they're intellectually mature. But, well, one of the cases that parents need to understand, when they're challenging books in schools, they'll talk about maturity. But as I try to break this down, there's emotional maturity, intellectual maturity, and then moral maturity. And no 18-year-old, not the brightest 18-year-old, has a moral compass set in stone and fully mature by their senior year. And that's what they're trying to transform, is the moral compass of our other people's children in schools. But I went just back to the play. There is also the angel. I don't know what to say. She has 8 vagina. Can I say that?
Well, I guess, yeah.
Okay. Because her visits prompt sexual arousal and orgasm. They use the most foul street language for, I don't even know what I can say. It's just
okay. It's
obscene.
Yeah, it's an obscene,
right,
pro-homosexual, perverse play
by anyone's standards.
And how many parents knew that this was being taught to see to the brightest and all senior English students, or many of them? How many parents actually had any clue what was going on here?
Well, we have 2 high schools in our district, Deerfield and Highland Park. This play had been taught for 5 years at Highland Park High School. No parental notification, no opt-out.
Unbelievable.
The year of the controversy was the second year it was taught at Deerfield High School. There was parental notification and opt-out because first I complained about it, and then a community organization complained about it. So they had to offer parental notification and opt out. But what was interesting about this is the teacher who taught it, before he sent the letter to the parents, he gave a letter to his students in class, and it said in the letter, I wrote about it on IFI's website, he gave a letter to the kids in class that said, before your parents get their letter, I'm giving you this letter. And then it was a 1.5 page manipulative hard sell to get these kids to read it. I'd worked in the writing center, and we saw the English teacher's assignments, and often their kids are given choices. You can read, you know, one of a number of plays or novels. And it usually just leaves it at that, and the kids research it. I've never seen anything as manipulative as this. So he made it extraordinarily difficult for parents who may not have wanted their kids to read it. He's made it likely that they will have a fight with their kids because he put such a hard sell on this and made it appear that the language was such that mature students would choose this play.
Yeah.
And so it was really troubling. So I had been communicating with the school board, the administration, for about 2 or 3 years about these issues. And
now, well, hold on, back up. This is something that even most conservative teachers or instructors would not do. Did you sense, you were not worried about working at Deerfield for the rest of your life? Or, I mean, most teachers are worried about their pensions and other things that keeps them from this sort of advocacy. How were you different?
Well, I mean, my position was more tenuous because I didn't have tenure. I was not in a tenure-track position, and I was not paid the way teachers are paid. But the risk was greater for me, and I'm not trying to paint myself as a martyr. I'm just saying that's the reality. I had no job security because mine was never a tenure-track position. Tenured teachers at Deerfield High School cannot be fired because they would speak out on this issue. I mean, I had one teacher tell me that he's actually an elder in his church, and he told me, Lori, I'm a people pleaser. I care about what people think about how I dress. I'm not going to take this issue on. Mm-hmm. Even though he agreed that this was problematic, what was going on. I mean, we also had to go to professional development seminars and workshops.
I want to get into those later, the bias of the development seminars. But
right.
Is it a fair analogy to compare this? I think it, in many ways it's just different and worse. What if the kids were being taught sort of a Nazi glorifying play? I'm sure the gay activists would be furious at that analogy, but the point is it is an obnoxious exercise. It was a dirty, filthy exercise. It was something that would be shocking to even most adults. I would say that is not any, there's no exaggeration there. Any adult who dare read Angels in America would be shocked at the content, and yet this was being foisted on these impressionable teenagers.
That's right. And there was a backstory to this that our community didn't even hear. Many teachers who hold left-of-center views, when they discovered what was in this play and that it was being taught, were offended and angry and went to one of the administrators and complained about it. And the community never heard that. When our superintendent, who happens to be homosexual, spoke before a community meeting, the room held 140 and they were spilling out, he told the community that the administration stands behind his decision to teach this play. I emailed him, and I have the emails, and asked him who precisely was he referring to, because I happen to know administrators who did not support this. And it turned out to be two administrators in addition to himself. I actually knew those administrators, and that surprised me. And I wrote and I asked him, I said, okay, I understand that publicly they supported your decision, but in your discussions, when you were deciding whether to support the teaching of this play, did they ever express disapproval? And he wrote me back and said, frankly, I'm stunned that you would ask about private conversations. And I wrote him back and I said, you and I have very different views of governmental transparency. A question about discussions about curricula is a perfectly legitimate question for someone to ask. And I remember, I was a community member too. I live in this community. And I said, and your refusal to answer my question tells me precisely what I believe to be true. They didn't approve of this. But this is one of the problems, is that community members don't know what's going on behind the scenes on
right
regarding school issues.
Now you talked about private conversations, so let's go back to your FOIA request. Mm-hmm. You learned about this possibility of getting a Freedom of Information Act request on your name. You submitted it. What have they said about Lori Higgins? And you find that you get this incredible information back about what was said in internal emails, et cetera, about Lori Higgins, one of which even accused your son of being an anti-Semite, right?
Oh, no, it accused us of being anti-Semitic.
The Higgins family?
The Higgins family. What George Fornero, who is the superintendent, had received...
Who's an open homosexual.
That's right. He had received an email from a community member who didn't know me, but claimed to know someone who did know me, and said, when my son, who is now 25, was in middle school in seventh grade, and we live in a very Jewish community, I mean, there's a lot of Jews in our community, and that we did not allow him to go to his girlfriend's bat mitzvah. They said he had a Jewish girlfriend at the time, because we were anti-Semitic, that we didn't want his pure heart to be stained by the Christ killers who would be at the bar mitzvah, or bat mitzvah rather.
Okay, well, now what's the truth about your son?
Well, the truth is, my son is a very gregarious and well-liked kid. He went to countless bar and bat mitzvahs, and in fact, many kids in this community, their parents allow them to go to the bat mitzvah party or bar mitzvah party without going to the morning services. And we had a rule that if they wanted to go to the party, they had to go to the more important part, which were the services. And so, and now George Fornero cannot control what emails he receives, but he forwarded that to a colleague of mine in the English department. He happened to be the teacher who was teaching Angels in America. And for what reason, I have no idea. This was a completely libelous, malignant lie. My son dated girls in high school who were Jewish. Some of his best friends were Jewish. His very dearest friend growing up was Jewish, and not only that, was Jewish and came out as homosexual in high school. We love this boy. My son loves this boy.
Yeah, so, and the point is, you know, it's just a lie, and
it's about maligning.
It's a smear. It's about maligning people, and it's okay to malign them if they're against homosexuality.
Right.
Shame on you, George Fornero. That was a terrible thing you did. It was not justified in the case of making your argument, even if you disagree with Lori Higgins. But that's the way that the left operates. I'm Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth Hour. You're listening to an interview with Lori Higgins, and we'll be right back in a minute. Hello, everybody. everybody. You're talking to, you're listening to Americans for Truth Hour. My name is Peter LaBarbera. I'm president of Americans for Truth. We are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the homosexual activist movement. Our website is americansfortruth.org. If you're inclined to support our efforts of opposing the powerful homosexual, bisexual, transsexual movement, speaking the truth in love, we'd encourage you to go to our website and make a donation, sign up as a monthly supporter. It takes money to fight the very powerful and well-funded, by the way, homosexual movement. So support us if you can. The website, again, is americansfortruth.org. We're talking with my good friend Lori Higgins with Illinois Family Institute. Lori is a gifted writer and one who uses reason in opposing the arguments of the gay lobby. Lori, we were talking off the air. We just got done talking about this obscene play, Angels in America, and you made an observation about something that the principal, George Fornero, at Deerfield, the Deerfield principal, what is his title again?
He's the superintendent of District 113, which is Deerfield and Highland Park High Schools.
That's in the northern suburbs north of Chicago. Sorry.
Correct.
Sorry about that mistake. But something that George Fornero had said about the play.
George and I had met months before this became a public controversy, and I had expressed my serious concerns about this play. And at that time, he told me that he had read the play, he had seen the play live, and he had seen the six-hour HBO miniseries, and frankly, those were his words, he didn't think it was a good play. Then when the public controversy blew up, he publicly said it was a powerful play that should be taught. So I don't know why someone who doesn't think it's a good play would read it and see it live and see a movie. But the point is, the community never heard this discussion that I had with him. I don't know which is his true perspective on that. I don't know, you know, but it was troubling to me.
Right. And then going back to the emails that you had uncovered with the Freedom of Information Act request, that's FOIA, you got these emails that you learned had all the things that had been said about you, the awful lies, your family was anti-Semitic, and all this this misinformation that was put out about you. What it speaks to really is the way that the liberals, shall we say, pro-homosexual side actually views diversity. When it comes to a diversity of viewpoint, intellectual diversity, tolerance, and for people of an opposing moral view, some would say a religious viewpoint opposed to homosexuality, we don't see much interest in diversity then, do we?
No. The FOIAs actually revealed, because included in my FOIAs, I found out that they were circulating things that I had written that were posted on your website, for instance. They were circulating those articles, which were about homosexuality. One of the social workers actually described my views on homosexuality, which are very orthodox, very traditional, very conventional. She described them in an email to a coworker as pathological. So when they say that they honor all voices in public schools and they respect and value diversity and cultivate diversity, it's on this topic, it is utter hypocrisy. They don't value diversity. They don't cultivate it. You will have kids reading plays, novels, magazine articles, seeing films, hearing speakers, all that implicitly and explicitly affirm liberal views of the nature and morality of homosexuality. They will never even read a single essay by a conservative scholar on this topic. And parents need to start demanding that policy be written that if teachers are going to present resources on a controversial issue, and this is chief among them, that there should be policy that requires that they spend equal time and present equivalent resources from scholars on both sides, the best writing from the best scholars on both sides of debates.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you about the promotion of homosexuality argument. We're talking to Lori Higgins, who's a writer on education issues for Illinois Family Institute, where I used to work. Their website is illinoisfamily.org. I highly encourage you to subscribe to Lori's and IFI's emails. Our website at Americans for Truth is americansfortruth.org. But, Lori, I know one thing that's commonly said to people when they object to what they consider homosexuality-promoting arguments is the gay side comes back and says, well, we're not promoting homosexuality in schools. We're just teaching kids to be tolerant of gays and lesbians. How do you respond to that? Obviously, if it's so one-sided in its promotion, in the way it deals with it, that is tantamount to promotion.
Of course it is. I mean, first of all, tolerance does not mean affirmation or approval. Tolerance means to put up with something we find objectionable. So we should be putting up with, if we're going to address this issue, putting up with context, resources that affirm or embody or espouse views on both sides, and we don't see that. And if you only see the resources that embody, espouse, or express one set of views, that means they are promoting those. They're not really promoting critical thinking or valuing critical thinking. If you did, you would have writings by scholars on the opposing side of whether the issue is gay adoption or same-sex marriage or even something as fundamental as, is homosexuality really ontologically equivalent to race? And we don't see that. When you have speakers come in, and they do this a lot in schools under the disguise of trying to end bullying, they'll have speakers come in to share their stories of suffering, how they've been made fun of, and to reveal the ontological and moral assumptions, you have to replace it with another behavior. Let's say there are kids who are bullied for being promiscuous. Girls are called sluts and hoes if they're promiscuous. Can you imagine a panel discussion of girls coming in and talking about how they are either, or let's say a mixed panel of boys and girls who identify as polyamorous, and they're made fun of for their attractions and their behaviors based on what they consider central to their identity. Can you imagine a school allowing that panel to come in and talk about how they've been made fun of and they've been teased and this is who they are and they've always had these feelings?
No, clearly there's a value associated with, that's a high right. value with affirmation of homosexuality. But I think you said something, I don't want to gloss over it. You talked really about, you implied a redefinition of tolerance. Let's talk about that. What does intolerant mean today, as opposed to what, you know, how tolerance used to be defined?
Well, I would rather approach it from what does tolerance mean and how is that used? Tolerance, which actually technically means to put up with something you find objectionable, has been redefined to mean approval, embrace, celebration, affirmation of. And it's really four things: race, gender, class, sexual orientation are the topics about which we're talking, I mean, about which those, the idea of tolerance and diversity are used. And so, but in an educational context, if we really mean that we should be tolerant, it means we should tolerate the expression of ideas that we find objectionable. And that means both sides have to tolerate it. So if we're going to be tolerant of those who affirm homosexuality and express those views, then we have to be equally tolerant of those who express views critical of volitional homosexual acts. And that's what we don't see. In fact, we see quite the opposite. We see vilification and mockery and ridicule and charges of hatred leveled toward anyone who expresses the view that volitional homosexual acts are not moral.
Absolutely. There is a clear campaign to associate Christian or religious or even just moral objection to homosexuality as hatred. And it's a very serious attempt, and it's making a lot of headway in society, isn't it?
It is. And we don't, and they don't apply that principle consistently. They don't say that those who, for example, express moral disapproval of polyamory or adult consensual incest, they don't say that those people hate those who engage in incest or those who identify as polyamorous.
Well, what about the moral disapproval towards just critics like us, to traditional thinkers? There's lots of objections, lots of, I think, very hateful things said, but somehow that doesn't fall under the classification of hate or intolerance.
Of course. I mean, it's very selectively applied. And really, I mean, someone asked me once that I worked with, do I realize that some of the things that I say are hurtful? And so I ruminated on her challenge a bit. And when I got back to her, I said, you know, what her statement implies is that the ethical legitimacy of speech is determined by the subjective response of someone around you. But of course, if you applied that consistently and not just to homosexual behavior, it would preclude anyone from making any statements about what constitutes moral behavior. I couldn't say adultery is wrong because someone around me might be committing adultery and they're going to feel bad.
Right.
And that brings me to another problem in public schools, which is this idea that subjective feelings have assumed some, you know, supreme place in schools. If public schools shouldn't say anything, and no teacher, no resource should say anything that makes people feel bad, then they have to stop presenting resources that implicitly indict Orthodox beliefs on homosexuality, because Muslims, Orthodox Jews, Roman Catholics, many Protestants, and even some secularists believe that homosexuality is wrong. So when public schools implicitly say, your beliefs are hateful, they're going to make those people feel bad. So if subjective feelings are the arbiter of what constitutes right speech, then they have to stop presenting those resources.
Yes, and you're demanding fairness and logic and from public schools, which is a pretty
tall order.
Yeah, these days especially.
Right.
We're talking to Lori Higgins with Illinois Family Institute. Their website is illinoisfamily.org. I'm Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth. Our website is americansfortruth.org. AmericansForTruth.org. When we come back, we're going to start delving into the specious secular arguments that are used. This is part one of a two-part interview with Lori Higgins of Illinois Family Institute. We'll be right back with the Americans for Truth Hour. Our website again, AmericansForTruth.org. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. My name is Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth. We're talking with our good friend Lori Higgins of Illinois Family Institute. Lori is a writer on education issues with IFI. Their website is illinoisfamily.org. Our website is americansfortruth.org. Lori, let's look at some of the specious arguments that we see from the gay side. You just dealt with promoting homosexuality, this idea that even if you present almost wholly one side of an issue, you're not promoting that cause, which is preposterous, of course, especially given the controversial history of homosexuality, which was once not even discussed publicly in civilized society. All of a sudden now, if you present an opposing view, you're a hater. But let's talk about this. You alluded earlier to the frequent comparison between race and homosexuality, and talk about that and also the charge that basically if you oppose homosexuality, you are analogous to a racist.
Well, I think this is the one that is sort of most fundamental to them making progress that should never have been made, because it's actually everywhere you're out in the culture, this assumption, this analogy is promoted with no justification or evidence. The analogy between race and homosexuality is assumed without ever having to be proven. And the problem with that is, you know, there's broadly two categories of conditions. You know, there are conditions that are 100% heritable, immutable, and have no behavioral implications whatsoever, such as race or skin color, your biological sex. Those are conditions that are 100% heritable, that are immutable, and that have no behavioral implications. I mean, the fact that you're a woman doesn't mean anything about any particular kind of behavior. And then there are another category of conditions, which are those that are not 100% immutable, I mean, which are not 100% heritable, that are mutable, and that there are behaviors associated with them that are open and legitimate for moral assessment. And of course, that can be promiscuity, polyamory, adult consensual incest, pedophilia, homosexuality, cross-dressing. It can even include aggression, drug use, all sorts of behaviors. And so now, the one side, homosexual activists and their supporters, have sort of plucked homosexuality out of one category and are treating it as if it's like race, like biological sex, and they never provide any evidence or any justifications for their claim that those conditions are the same. And from those assumptions, then they say, and if you disapprove of homosexuality, it's equivalent to racism. Well, that claim is based on accepting the prior assumption that they never have to prove. Even among the homosexual community, there's a body of thinking called queer theory, which disagrees with the idea that it's immutable. I'm not arguing that people choose their same-sex attraction. I am arguing they choose how to respond to it, and you can choose to respond to act on those impulses or not act on them.
Right, and the whole discussion of the attractions, that's a whole philosophical discussion, theological discussion for another time. But
exactly.
The reality is you can choose whether to embrace feelings, temptations, whatever you want to call them, or not. And
right.
And the fact is it's a term that's strange to people, but there are ex-gays, people who once called themselves gay or lesbian. I just spent some time, we're going to be interviewing her with Charlene Cothran, who was once an activist, a top activist in the minority, the African-American lesbian community. She is now ex-lesbian. She no longer struggles with lesbian desires. She is a minister. She's reaching out to people, helping them leave the homosexual lifestyle. So, it sounds trite, but it's true. There are ex-gays. There are no ex-blacks. There are no ex-Hispanics. And it's a totally spurious analogy.
Exactly. And not only do we need to understand that and not be kind of bullied into accepting that or acting as if we accept it, but we should start challenging people. In what way? I mean, we're constantly put on the defensive, and I say sometimes go on the offensive and say, what is your justification? I mean, their justification is likely to be, well, I've always had these feelings. Well, I've always had selfish feelings, and so does that make it like race? Because I've always had those feelings, because they persist over time and are seemingly intractable. Does that make it like race? I mean,
how about the fact that African Americans are one of the leading groups in society that oppose things like same-sex so-called marriage.
That's right.
How does that factor? If they're analogous to racists, they are.
That's right. And many of them are deeply offended by that analogy. And so that, I think that's the chief false analogy that's used in the culture to promote homosexuality, and we need to start more aggressively challenging that. And I mean, everybody, when they're talking to their neighbors or they're talking to their colleagues at work and this discussion comes up, they need to challenge them to provide evidence for their claims. We don't make that, I'm frequently challenged to defend, like, why do you believe it's wrong? And I'll say, why do you believe it's right? I mean, yours is the really ahistorical, radical position, the other position, that homosexual acts are moral. And how did you arrive at the conclusion that this is moral conduct? And we never demand that, the similar sort of expectation that they justify and prove the validity of their claim.
Right. There's a sort of a intimidation where they're always demanding answers. And you're right. What the question should be, what's right about homosexuality?
That's right.
Why should homosexuality be the promotion of, say, homosexual couples? Why should that be, or even worse, I think, the idea of having homosexual couples adopting children or creating families that are motherless or fatherless by design?
Right.
Why is that good? Why is that, should that be a goal, a worthy goal that our government should promote?
That's right. I mean, all sorts of things. I mean, you're talking about the government involvement in adoption. I think even conservatives don't understand what is marriage. It's not an utterly private institution centrally about the feelings and sexual desires of people. At least that's not why the government is involved. That might be the central concern of me as an individual, but when we're talking about what government sanctions, that's not why government's involved with marriage. Government couldn't care less who loves whom or who wants to have sex with whom. And so we have a lot of education that needs to be done on these issues so that Christians and conservatives, Orthodox, Jews, Muslims are comfortable it's never going to be comfortable to engage in a discussion where people just start screaming at you that you're a hater, but they will have confidence in sort of the intellectual justifications for their position.
Lori, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to answer the one about homophobia, that you're some kind of a homophobe if you disagree with homosexuality.
Well, I mean, that's an absurd, I mean, it means an irrational fear or hatred of homosexuals. And because you believe that homosexual conduct is not moral doesn't mean you fear or hate people. And that's not applied consistently either. We don't say that if you disapprove of polyamory, you're a polyphobe. I mean, it's just a bullying tactic. It's name-calling. You know, GLSEN has a no-name-calling.
GLSEN is the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, and we're going to have to talk about that group next week. But absolutely. Lori, give me 10 seconds more to give your website, and we have part two next week of the interview with Lori Higgins.
IllinoisFamily.org, and there's also a little icon you can click on that says DSA, which is where a lot of my writing on homosexuality in public schools is.
Okay, we've been talking with Lori Higgins, part one. We'll have part two of our excellent discussion with Lori, who really deals with these specious secular arguments. My name is Peter LaBarbara. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. Next week, we'll be on again with Lori Higgins. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org, AmericansForTruth.org. Americans for Truth needs your help. So go to the website and make a donation if you can. It's tax deductible. We're a 501c3 organization. We'll be talking next week again with Lori Higgins of the Illinois Family Institute. Thank you.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbara. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.